shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch.
Yeah.
And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. That was kind of a weak yeah, bud. You want to?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you, man?
Yeah, but I bet either you or I ought to get a glass of water.
Exactly. All right, so coming up tonight, we're going to be talking with Bobby Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association about a proposed change in the traffic laws, specifically the sobriety test that is given to people if an officer of the law suspects them of having been drinking. And you well know that any officer can pull you over if they suspect that you're driving impaired and administer what is called a field sobriety test. There are a number of different elements to that field sobriety test, and we'll be talking with Bobby Dooley about that and about her proposal to change some of that test. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. Right now, video cast on Phil TV and HD is up and running, and it's showing me sitting here in the studio in front of a number of slides that also show me only in more of a cartoon, caricature, psychedelic, and quite frankly, in some of these slides, I look dead. But all of those are a part of our video cast, as well as our El Pacifico shots from outside, the beautiful little film clips that Amanda Green has done for us. And we, of course, will bring you from the Internet any and all breaking news here on Phil TV and on the radio show. So join us over there at Phil TV and HD. After the show on Phil TV, we will have a Q&A. So please do join us if you're a Backstage Pass member. We will have a question and answer period after the show between 1 and 1:30. The story here that we are looking at and that Ms. Dooley and the Western Estates Homeowners Association has been looking at is a Florida woman in, I believe it is Jensen Beach, having been stopped by the Florida Highway Patrol and administered a field sobriety test, failed. She was given, among other many aspects of this test, the portion of that test where you close your eyes and you're either asked to touch your nose or you're asked to lean back. Not that I have any grand experience with field sobriety tests. It just so happens that I went online and I looked it up. And I also, quite frankly, have seen it administered. So let's get Bobby Dooley on the line from Western Estates, California. Bobby, we appreciate you being with us. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing really well, and we do appreciate you having us on.
And your husband Steve is there, right?
Yeah, Bill. How are you?
Very, very good. Now, I know that the two of you, in conjunction with Angels on Our Shoulders, which is a political action committee, you've been formulating or otherwise you've been sort of drawing up ideas on how to adjust or how to change the field sobriety test, just for the state of California?
Well, Phil, it would have to be for the state because I don't think there is any real, there's no real national uniform field sobriety test. Every state is different. The state of California is different slightly from, for instance, Florida, where this arrest took place. But they are similar in a couple of areas. And one is in that area that you're talking about, which is, it has to do with the ability, it's a neurological test, and has to do with sense of balance, equilibrium. It's an inner ear test, and we think is entirely unfair for a number of women for a lot of reasons.
Well, but notably, the main reason, as it was cited by this woman and is being cited by your organization, is the fact that women who are top-heavy, large-breasted, if you will, have a difficult time with balance.
Absolutely, and we've done, you know, we've done, I guess, as much as we can do in trying to educate the public to this. We've had women who are members of our organization speaking to different groups. We've had the police at a lot of our meetings, and we've tried to enlighten the police as to this problem. you call it top heavy, Phil. I think that's a very good description. But really, you know, when you get down to it, we have large breasts.
Okay.
And the reason why I'm saying that is because how do I put this?
Well, because there's a lot of women who don't.
Well, there are a lot of women who do not, and I think that causes a little bit of jealousy. A lot of them simply don't want to talk about it because they think it's silly.
All right, so in other words, when large-breasted women are asking for some change in how a law is worded or how a statute or regulation is worded, and when this request is coming from women with large breasts, you're not taken seriously.
No, I don't think we are. And it's mostly, I think, pushback from a lot of the women who, for whatever reason, feel insecure about their own physiognomy. And we're not here, Phil, to say, aren't we lucky we have large breasts? We're here to say that we suffer when we are stopped by the police. We're asked to get out of the car. We're given this field sobriety test. The test does not take into consideration how big our chest is. And we can't really, you know, bring this up in any reasonable or serious manner because some people think we're joking, you know?
Well, I can understand that, but I mean, if you're talking to adults.
Well, that's an Australian, you know, but it did take us a while.
We did have to break through a little bit. Some people think you're kidding, and again, we get pushback from the women who are not as large.
Well, you say you get pushback from women who are not as large. If you're talking to these women who are in your own organization, which is this kind of sort of political action organization that you have, and you say to them, we have a problem here with the field sobriety test in California and other places, does not take into consideration the fact that there are some women who have large chests, and therefore it's difficult for us to balance anyway, even if we were sober, is what you're saying, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so if you bring that to people in a serious and sober way, if you'll pardon the pun, then why wouldn't they take you seriously, regardless of whether or not you have larger breasts than them or...
You know something, Phil? The way you put it there, you would think that they would, but it is the nature of women to be a little petty.
Are you having a hard time, therefore, getting this pushed through in any meaningful way in Sacramento?
Both Sacramento and Tallahassee, Mr. Senator, because both states are where the effort being made right now. You know.
In both capitals, because again, you have to get the bill either in front of an influential committee member. You have to author it yourself and make sure that it is then seen by an influential committee member. You have to get meetings, and you have to really be relentless and just keep at it. And when you're asking people to change this statute so that we are protecting women with large breasts, they almost want to laugh at you. And a lot of the people who want to laugh at you are women.
I was going to ask you, are you getting most of your pushback from women or from men?
A lot of it from the women, because they, the men laugh too, because men are just, you know.
You know, a lot of the pushback is from women because they're, again, very childish about.
They're very insecure. Would you say that?
Yes. There is a childishness and an insecurity about women with large breasts asking for something in the legal field like this.
We're talking with Bobby and Steve Dooley here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And this is an interesting topic. It's a topic having to do with field sobriety tests. And the field sobriety test, as you may or may not know, has a part of it that tests one's equilibrium. You have to close your eyes, touch your nose with your fingers while your head is leaning back. You have to walk on one leg. Ms. Dooley and others are saying that women who are large-breasted, who are top-heavy, have a hard time with this test. And I don't hear them saying that they're making much progress either in California or in Florida, because women with smaller chests are being petty and they don't think it's serious, and they'd rather not talk about it. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways we can go with this tonight, a lot of different kinds of phone calls or questions that you folks may have. We're going to continue here in a moment. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And we'll be back with Bobby and Steve Dooley in a minute here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
And it is the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back here. Phil Hendry here along with Bobby and Steve Dooley as we talk about a proposed law that would change the sobriety test, the field sobriety test, from being one that administers the equilibrium test, if you will, or this test of balance, to large-chested women. And I wanted to ask you, Bobby, before we get much further, what about men who are also muscular?
Well, Phil, we don't really think that that we don't think that that's operable, because generally when you have a man that is you know, large in the chest, large in the arms, he's generally very muscular in the legs. There isn't that lack of balance that we're talking about.
Okay, 877-876 Phil. Again, you are asking for a law change, and I don't think I've asked you specifically what that is before we get to our phone calls. What do you want?
Well, we're really asking that when a woman is top-heavy, which should be very evident to any of the officers, that she simply not be administered this equilibrium test.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. Let's go to some phone calls, and we do have a couple of, I think, law enforcement people on the line. Here is James. Go ahead, James. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil. How you doing?
Fine.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I just wanted to say that I've done many, many, many DUIs with women that have large chests, small chests, fat women, skinny women, and the size of your cleavage has nothing to do with the alcohol content in your system. And if you think, then if you say, well, I can't do that, then we can switch and go to another exercise that will keep your chest from being a factor and you able to balance or do a test.
It would kind of test are you going to give a large-chested woman to test her balance?
Sure you can. You can do the HGN test. That's an eye test. You can do the finger count test.
You got to tell us, what is an HGN test?
Everything he's talking about, Phil, is balance. And you still have the problem of being top heavy.
HGN has nothing to do with balance, ma'am. That's where you're wrong.
Well, if you're testing balance, let's stick with balance. What are the tests that you can give her that would not have anything to do with, let's say, body shape or size, that kind of thing?
HGN test.
You just went back to the HGN test, which you said had nothing to do with balance, right?
Then
get off of that, and you need to listen to me, James. Get off of that and stay with the tests that are about balance.
The reason why he's not doing it is he can't do it. There are none.
Okay.
Well,
let him
know.
Sure you can.
Okay. Well, what are they?
Heel to toe is one of them. That's a balance test. Finger to nose is another one.
But and you're also bending. When you're doing finger to nose, you're bending backwards, aren't you?
No, sir. No, sir, you're not at all. Your arms are extended out to your sides, your fingers pointed out, and your head is tilted back as far as it goes.
Well, that
has nothing to do with your chest.
Well, you just asked him, Phil, you bend backwards. He said no, and then he just said that, yes, you do. And that's what we're talking about.
No, you do not.
And we run into this all the time. We run into this all the time.
Well, what do you mean you run into this all the time?
Well, this is a police officer who I'm sure doesn't think it's a problem, but he doesn't know. Because he's not a woman.
Yes, I do, ma'am. I fully understand.
How do you pretend to know if you're not a woman with a large, if you'll pardon me saying, a large chest?
I've put him in jail plenty of times, and I know that these standard field tests are directed and can be done by them. It's that simple. Unless they have a medical issue that keeps them from doing it. And having a big chest is not a medical issue.
Well, you know, Phil, this is what we're running up against. A lot of cops.
All you're doing is looking for a way to get out of DUIs. You're probably an alcoholic, and you probably wait too
long. Well, you know something, and you're probably not a very good cop. And you're probably the kind of cop that, you know, may treat women with large chests in a criminal way.
Well, that was not necessary.
Well, he called me an alcoholic.
All right. Did James hang up? Yeah, he did. 877-876-PHIL. I don't know that I heard him call you an alcoholic. Let me go over here to Sharon, and we're talking here about large-chested women dealing with the balancing tests on the balancing aspect of a sobriety test. Go ahead, Sharon.
I was just wondering if you could create something that you could basically strap onto a person and first show the person, you know, like a normally built person doing these sobriety tests, where they're walking just on their own, and then you strap something on that assimilates, that, you know, makes it seem like they would be like that, that they're going to move different because they're built different, and then you do the same test with this weighted thing on them to just kind of prove your point.
Well, wait a minute. Can I say something, Phil?
Go ahead.
What are you talking about?
What if you were to create something that you basically, you know how they have fat suits? For lack of a better word, I hate to say it like that, you know, like a fat suit. But what if you were to create something that was all that you strapped onto a normal person's chest and you demonstrated it? This is the person
walking. You're not going to get people. No, you have to get them to just be interested in it.
Well, you could do it online, couldn't you?
Maybe in your world, I don't know, but in the real world.
Well, the lady's asking, can you do something
No, Phil, we have to first bring this in front of people. The law has to be given to them before they want to put on any fake breasts. I think what she's saying is you can prove this to people by simulating having a large chest.
Yes.
And you heard what this officer just said. He doesn't want to hear about it.
So don't go to the office.
So they don't even want to.
Don't make a YouTube video.
Let me ask you something, ma'am. How do you do that online? How's that done? Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, she's gone. How do you do that online?
What I'm saying is people post YouTube videos all the time. And for example,
Let's forget about YouTube videos. I think, you know, we're into a problem here where people are coming up with ideas that they don't really. Yeah, there's all kinds of YouTube videos. Half of them if more than half are fake. I don't know that a YouTube video is going to convince anybody, first of all, and I don't know that they're going to think it's serious. They may think it's comic.
This is the kind of suggestion that you get from a woman that doesn't have this problem.
All right. Ms. Dooley, I don't think we have to assume people are against you. I think the lady is just suggesting.
We've heard these suggestions, and they're really not helpful.
All right. Anyway,
I'm trying to come at it from a scientific point of view.
I understand, but you can see that you're lacking basic understanding.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sharon, for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. All right. So it is kind of a problem that I guess what she's saying is, you know, you got to kind of walk a mile in somebody's shoes.
You have to know what it's like to live every day with a very large chest. Not a lot of women do. And certainly no men knows that. So
All right, we'll be back. 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-7445. We'll be back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley on changing the sobriety test so that large-chested women don't have to take those balance tests because their large breasts make it impossible to do that. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back. You're the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Bobby and Steve Dooley joining us tonight as we talk about field sobriety tests and how they may be difficult and how they may be unconstitutional when it comes to certain kinds of people. And, Bobby, you've been hearing people, we're talking about women with large breasts. This is all something that came about as the result of a woman in Florida, correct?
Well, no, not exactly, Phil, because there are a lot of girls in our political action committee, Steve.
Yeah, about three or four.
That have experienced that here in California. This young lady, by the way, was the first that I know of to actually take this into a civil litigation and to say essentially that she failed the physical part of the field sobriety test because of her large chest. And the fact that the police officer didn't really want to hear about that and instead administered the blood test, he never would have administered the blood test if she hadn't shown the equilibrium problem. And the equilibrium problem was from her chest.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't know how police officers...
No, that's what they do, Mr. Henry. They say... You know, if the lady showed that she was falling down, then they'll say we better do a test.
Yeah, if you fall down, if you show some kind of equilibrium problem, they're definitely going to administer a field sobriety test.
All right, or not a field sobriety test, you mean?
I mean a blood test.
All right, a blood test. So if you're not balanced properly, they're going to go ahead and then say, aha, there's a problem here. Let's get them on the breathalyzer.
Yeah, and they're getting on the breathalyzer to verify you're drunk.
Right. But they would never put you on the breathalyzer if you were not losing your balance. See, this is a constitutional issue, Phil, and that's why I think people really resist it. It's a constitutional issue.
Now, there was a lady that called here a moment ago, and she said there's a way of taking this to the legislature, either in Sacramento or Tallahassee or wherever, and saying, look, you know, here's how it affects us. You put on some kind of a jacket or vest or aid, some kind of a prosthetic aid that simulates having a large chest, and you demonstrate it, right?
Yeah, well, Phil, you could do that in front of a investigative committee, a subcommittee. Or you could use a woman with a large chest. What we're trying to do is at first get the legislation introduced. And you don't do one before the other. We're not going to go to Sacramento and say, you know, put on this fake prosthetic breast vest of some kind without first explaining to them what the problem is.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Now, you know, the law as it is, it requires a police officer to pull someone over if they think you're driving impaired. So already, when you get pulled over, the officer already has some suspicion, or at least he has some reason to think there's something wrong with the way you operate a motor vehicle.
Absolutely, Phil. And again, this is a part of what is really an ongoing. Steve, you, my husband put it very well.
It's like it's a prejudice.
It is. It is a sort of a prejudice against women who have these kinds of bodies, who are large-breasted, who have a body that a lot of women desire. So you you're up against individuals, people, who are going to drag their feet or who don't understand. That's why we say it is a constitutional issue.
When you call this a constitutional issue, what do you mean? Are you saying that there...
Well, there are, first of all, the right to search and seizure, we think, is square in the middle of this. If I have large breasts, which I do, I am going to be treated in a much more insensitive and unconstitutional way, because no one will be taking into consideration my body. And as a result of that, Phil, I will be treated in a way that does not take into consideration.
Almost like having a handicap. It's not a handicap.
Yeah, that doesn't take into consideration what my physical limitations are.
Why is that search and seizure?
It's not really. It's like black.
It's more about if I was black.
It's more about if you were black, meaning it's discrimination based upon body type.
Yeah, it's more of a discrimination, like if you're Asian or a black.
If you have large breasts.
So you're not saying you're a minority, are you? If you guys wanted to put this into qualify it or actually categorize it, it would be almost, and I'm not saying that you are disabled, but it's almost like a disability.
Well, no, it's not a disability, I can assure you.
No, you can't call it a disability because there's too many other women out there that wish that they was like.
No, I'm not going to call it a disability, but it's like a limitation that someone with a disability would have. It's like saying, I can't do that because my body won't allow me to do that. If you have to have a wheelchair ramp because I can't get up some steps, if you have to have restroom stalls that need to have more space because you have to have room for the wheelchair, and so on. We know from experience, elevators are the same way. We know from experience that certain people have certain challenges physically, and so we have to change things to accommodate them. Don't you think that that is similar?
I don't want to be considered. Are you saying that I'm like someone who's in a wheelchair?
Yeah, that's ridiculous, Mr. Henry.
No, I'm not saying that. No, Ms. Dooley, nobody's going to mistake someone, a woman with large breasts, as having a handicap or some kind of terrible physical condition that people feel sorry for. You know what I mean. Everybody is. It is an aspect of a woman's beauty that some people, and not all of us, I will tell you, think is very desirable. However, what you're saying is that desirable aspect of a woman's physicality actually limits her as much as somebody with a handicap.
Well, again, you're using the word handicap.
Yeah, we can't use that word because it makes my wife sound as if she has, something that's like a fake breast, you know?
No, Mr. Dooley, you guys are focusing on something that you shouldn't focus on. And
well, either way, Phil, we don't really want to go down that road. What we simply want to say is this. My constitutional rights have been violated by Florida and California because I have large breasts, and they make me take the field sobriety test that forces me to balance, and I can't. And there's no need to go into, disability. I think that's very insulting.
And Ms. Dooley, I'm not saying you have a disability.
No, I know that.
What you're just saying, it sounds like you had a mastectomy.
It does. It sounds as if the breasts that I'm dealing with are reconstructed. And I can assure you that is not the case.
What difference does it make?
I can assure you I don't have reconstructed breasts.
But yeah, but what difference does it make if we're talking about your access to... having your access or at least your ability to take a field sobriety test and not flunk it because of a physical limitation.
It's not a limitation.
It's not a limitation. I have real breasts. They're not...
All right. I'm not saying that you don't. I'm saying, you know, well, I'll tell you what we'll do is take a break so we can, because I may want to talk to you guys off the air to explain this. I'm not saying you got a disability. I'm saying that it is a physical limitation similar to what people with disabilities have, that perhaps the law could be changed based on that. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Back with Bobby and Steve Dooley in just a moment.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
Hey, welcome back. You're the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Bobby and Steve Dooley joining us from the Western Estates Homeowners Association, as well as the Angels on Our Shoulders Political Action Committee. Ms. Dooley is discussing a proposed change in the field sobriety test, which, of course, is just inclusive is the breathalyzer. We're not saying the field sobriety test is a breathalyzer. Field sobriety test, Ms. Dooley, as I understand it, or all of these other physical tests?
Well, yes, the field sobriety test is a basic test of one's the neural pathways from the brain to the body. Can you balance? Does your body respond to commands from the brain and so forth? And they are neurological in nature, and they can tell the police officer if he's well trained.
Well, what do you say, well trained?
Well, I just don't think those police officers in Florida understood what that woman said. She has a very large chest. I have a very large chest. All you have to do is say those words to, God forbid, a female officer, and you're in trouble.
Yeah, we got a lot of problems with the female officers. Right away.
Well, what are the female officers doing?
They see you when you get out of the car, and they immediately, some of them, will cop an attitude about your chest is bigger than theirs or something like that.
What about the male officers?
Well, the male officers are distracted.
The male officers will be distracted, and there's nothing you can really say to them and say, you know, my balance is affected. Some of them will snicker.
Yeah, but we've talked to at least one officer here tonight who was very professional.
Well, absolutely, Phil. And those are the ones that you hope would understand.
All right. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Henry Show. Let me go to a phone call. We have William. Go ahead, William. You're on with Bobby and Steve Dooley. William, you're on, man.
Oh, hey. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm listening to your show on the radio, and you know, it really seems like this is a case almost of semantics. It's like, I don't know what you might have said to this lady off the air, but it seems as though I'm just being completely lost in whatever case she's presenting.
Okay, William, why don't you do me a favor, and instead of going all over the road here, you were talking about Wisconsin over the age of 70, blah blah blah. Do you remember that?
I'm sorry. No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, thanks for calling us, though. Poor man. He must have some sort of... he was saying that in the state of Wisconsin, people over 70 are not given sobriety tests.
Well, there again, Phil, that's a problem. I don't want, and no woman with large breasts wants to be identified with elderly people who obviously may have some damage to their nervous system. You know,
yeah, or anybody like got a muscular dystrophy or something.
Right. That's attempting to put women with large breasts in a category of having a physical spastic motion.
Well, I don't know that that's the case. You know.
Yeah, but you know what we're saying, Mr. Henry.
No, I don't know that that's the case at all. I think what you're reacting to that whole situation vis-a-vis the handicap thing, and I'm just not going there with you guys. Okay, here is Chris. Chris, you're on the. Let's see. Chris, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, sir. Chris? Okay. 877-877-876-PHIL. Here is 877-876-PHIL. And we're talking with Bobby and Steve Dooley here about the field sobriety tests that include for men, for women, the balancing. And if you're a large-breasted woman, it's something you can't do. Bobby, before we let you guys go, I would ask you, do you have a website or an address or something that people can contact?
Well, right now, Phil, what we're attempting to do is screen a lot of women. We want women the best that we possibly can. We want women who are conforming to the physical parameters. We want women who do have the large breasts, women who understand what we're up against. We appreciate the input of women who are small-chested, but unfortunately, they don't really know the experience, and we get into an awful lot of conversations with them where they want to, it's almost like a wannabe thing, right, Steve?
Yeah, there's a wannabe when a woman with small chest.
What do you mean, wannabe?
Well, a lot of women with small chests want to talk about what it's like and talk about breast enhancement. And we are women, by the way, Phil, that don't have false or fake or enhanced breasts. We have natural breasts, and they're really big. And as a result, they cause us problems.
So you've got women with small chests that are trying to join your organization and do what?
Well, they just want to, you know, they want to be with big chests.
Yeah, they are. They're very much wannabes, and they also don't understand the issue, and that is a difficult thing to deal with. So all we're saying is this. If you want to help us, you need to be a woman with a large chest. You need to be a woman that is serious about helping us change this law. And we'd rather not have female police officers because we may run into them out there, and they get into the whole jealousy thing, too.
Well, I mean, if you've got female police officers that are out on the highways dealing with this problem and they want to join your organization, they would want to help you.
Yeah, they want to help you, but they also they get resentful when they see it.
Yeah, they may be in our organization, but once they pull us over, you know, then they look us up and down. And suddenly they're seeing what they're missing, you know.
All right. Well, the best of luck to you guys. And I don't know whether, you know, I had a guy say to me, what about the, for instance, what about the physical testing of groups of women? What about focus groups? What about research? And then you put this all together and you take this in front of a legislature.
Well, what about it?
Yeah, we're on your show trying to get this done on a bunch of women.
What do you want us to do, parade a lot of large-chested women in front of the...
Well, he's just saying if you have your statistics and you have your information down, you know, it's a lot easier.
No, I don't think so, Phil. This is a pretty easy problem to understand.
All right. Well, Bobby and Steve Dooley, thank you very much, and the best of luck to you. And, you know, I can only say it sounds like it's going to be a long, hard road.
Well, Phil, again, if people look at us like we're freaks, then we do have a problem, but we're not freaks. We have something that women want. Big, fat.
Okay. Did you? Yeah, you dumped that?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, women want what you got, Ms. Dooley, as in the large breasts. You don't have to get that graphic. And also, you do have a long, hard road, because I'm telling you, if they deal with this at any level at all, they're going to deal with it as a... Not like it's a disability, but they'll be coming at it from the same place. They're going to be saying, this is a physical limitation, and we are going to have to change the sobriety test. I don't think they're going to do it, because I just heard these police officers saying that they don't see other women having this problem. There's ways of getting around those physical tests. You know, you can go and have the breathalyzer.
What are you talking about having a breathalyzer without taking a test?
Well, yeah, they talked about having a breathalyzer without taking the test because you don't have to take those physical tests. You can go straight to the breathalyzer. You can go straight to the blood test. you know.
Yeah, what's the point though? I mean, if you got a big boob, and the boob made you fall over.
Yeah, what do you do with that?
If you've got big boobs and the boob made you fall over.
Well, what are you laughing about?
Well, what are you talking about, man? All right, so
then you're gonna want to have a breathalyzer.
Yeah, you probably will, because you want to say to the cop, look, man, I've got a balance problem, you know.
But it ain't going to be you.
Huh?
It's not going to be you.
No, I know it's not going to be me.
Yeah, so why are you going, hey, look, man?
I'm pretending like I'm the woman, okay? And I'm not going to do a female voice. The woman's going to say to the cop, hey, officer, what I'd like to do is...
But she's not going to put her hands out like that, because that'll show more of the boob.
Will you shut up and let me finish? She'll say, take me to the breathalyzer. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. I don't want these stinking tests. That's the end of that problem. Thank you. World famous. God, bud. World famous Phil Hendry's. With the boob makes you fall over.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, uh-huh. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. Wow.
Big, fat, large, swinging.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It is the world famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And welcome back to our program. We did let Ms. Dooley go because she was suffering from a little bit of a cold, which generally happens when...
When you're suffering from a cold.
Yes, when I'm suffering. You shut up. When the air dries out, and the air is drying out, man, as we speak. Actually, no, in all seriousness, we've got... it's allergy season in many parts of the country, believe it or not, and of course, this extends all the way through the spring. Here in the Southwest, we get all kinds of dry air this time of year. We got some winds blowing. We're going to get some rain next month. We're going to get, I mean, man, it gets really weird around here, and I think I've seen people really suffering with this, so we let them go. We do have this hour a follow-up for you on the whole Susan G. Komen Planned Parenthood thing. Well, you know, this is like part three of this, because it's been a very interesting... we were out in front of this the other night. I guess it was maybe Wednesday or Tuesday night when we were talking about it. And at that time, the word was that Susan G. Komen, the foundation, had stopped their funding of Planned Parenthood because of a possible subcommittee hearing on their adherence to federal guidelines. Now, that's different from saying they're being investigated for crimes. It was a subcommittee hearing chaired by a Florida Republican congressman who is an anti-abortion, or if you will, pro-life congressman. Then the next day, the word came from Nancy Brinker, who said, oh, no, no, no. No, we've just are beginning to reassess who we want to give our money to and who we don't. No, it's got nothing to do with that, right? So that was reason number two. And then finally today, the word, or yesterday, I should say, the word came down that Susan G. Komen had reversed themselves and are going to resume funding Planned Parenthood. And the statement from Susan G. Komen was as follows. We simply don't want to fund organizations that may be under criminal investigation or have been convicted of some criminal misdeed. So that is not the case with Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood and even the Susan G. Komen Foundation said it. They said, we are not going to stop funding organizations simply because they're under the microscope of a political investigation. And that's exactly what this thing is and was. On the line with us from the University of Washington in Seattle is Don Mixa. Don is a professor of engineering up there and has joined us to talk as a contributor on the Phil Hendry Show for liberal, progressive causes, as well as issues relative to the Democratic Party. Don, how are you this evening?
Well, Phil, I'm doing well, and thank you for having me on the program.
Don, the Susan G. Komen Foundation, as I mentioned, reversed themselves and said, we're now going to give that money to Planned Parenthood, and we're now going to say, it's got nothing to do with their funding of abortions. This is simply us saying we don't want to give money to anybody that's under criminal investigation.
Well, you know, look, Phil, you can put it any way you want to. The bottom line is the Susan G. Komen Foundation was found with her hand in the cookie jar. I think they got caught. Being a little too political. I think they have members on that board. You mentioned one of these gentlemen the other day. I think his name is Raffaele, or it's an Italian name, I think. And Raffaele, he's a Komen board member. He suggested in an interview that the foundation had been unprepared for a firestorm caused by the decision to halt the grants. He said that it was about the anti-abortion movement, and they didn't want to give money to Planned Parenthood. And then they came out, Susan G. Komen said, no, it isn't. So I think they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. I think they got caught looking pretty stupid, and they had to reverse it.
Now, there was a firestorm. Speaking of Mr. Raffaele, he said that there was a firestorm, in your words, of criticism from people who have traditionally supported Planned Parenthood themselves. And they were asking the question, why is the Susan G. Komen Foundation, why are they getting political?
Well, I think they got political because they got a lot of money, and they've got the, they have, or they've lent their ear to, I should say, the anti-abortion movement in Congress. I don't know, really, why they did what they did. It was a bad decision. It could have been a disaster. I have personally known many people, many women who have benefited from Planned Parenthood. Yes, they do provide abortion counseling, and yes, they do provide the medical procedure for terminating pregnancy. It's not all that they do. And when the Susan G. Komen Foundation decided they would suspend the grant money...
Now, let me just jump in here. When they stopped giving the grant money, there was an outpouring of donation to Planned Parenthood that I think was around $650,000, and all last year, Susan G. Komen gave to Planned Parenthood's, what, $680,000?
Oh, yeah. No, they made up for it. There's no question about it.
Yeah, so in one day, they made up for whatever this shortfall was going to be.
Well, yes, absolutely did, Phil, but here is my point. That's really not the point, whether they're going to make up for the money or not. The point that I'm making, and the point that a lot of us were making when we heard about this, is just the out-and-out... I think the betrayal that the Susan G. Komen Foundation, the betrayal that they created here on Planned Parenthood to suddenly say, we're not giving you this money, and they have been giving the money. Who did they think they were, and who are they listening to, and who is feeding them with what and in what ear? And we come to find out it's this guy in Florida, this anti-abortion congressman. This guy started a firestorm when he started this investigation. And a lot of us got on the phone and said, look, we don't know who you're in bed with, and we don't know why, but you're going to resume money to Planned Parenthood, and you're going to do it as soon as you hear the click of this phone hanging up. Now, that's not an if, that's not a maybe, that's a now, and that's a gonna.
And what will you say, some of us?
I got on the phone and a few people that I know, and we just contacted people that we know. I don't want to give any names.
Are they people that work with the foundation?
Let's say they're friends, and they have communication, and they have contacts within the Susan G. Komen organization. And I got on the line. I said, it's Don Mixon. You know, and I'm representing an alliance of faculty and students. And you know how we feel about Planned Parenthood, and you know personally how I feel about Planned Parenthood. I thank God that two young ladies that I know were able to avail themselves of those services. It not only saved them a lifetime of unbelievable hardship, but it also saved me as well, having to change my life and support two families. And so this is something, Phil, that reaches beyond just the woman.
And so what you called up somebody and said what?
I simply said to them what I told you. I said, look, I don't care why the decision was made. I've got a suspicion it was made because of this guy in Florida with his anti-abortion this and anti-abortion that. He can do whatever he wants to do. That's fine. It's a free country. But I said, what you're going to do, and, well, can we talk? I said, no, you're not going to talk about anything. I said, I'm not having a discussion. Now, you are going to go to the board, and you're going to tell them what I told you, which is that $650,000 is going to go back into the coffers at Planned Parenthood, and you're going to make an announcement saying, we never did mean to cut it off. We're sorry. We messed up. Whatever you got to do to make this thing right. I said, you're going to do it. You're going to do it now, because it was dinner time. And I told him, he said, well, I got to go get dinner. I said, you're not going to get any dinner. I said, you're not going to see your children. You're not going to see your wife. You're not even going to, you know, I don't want to be facetious, but I told him, you're not even going to the bathroom. You're going to get on the phone or go over there physically, even if you have to walk, even if you have to hitchhike, and tell these people what's going
to
happen.
So are you telling me then that there was a, it sounds to me like there was a focused and direct and pointed response from supporters of Planned Parenthood to Susan G. Komen?
It was very focused, Phil. It was very, very much a nose-to-nose.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to say. Some kind of a nose-to-nose thing with Susan G. Komen saying, look, you people better this or that or what? I mean, what was the leverage you had? What was the quid pro quo? I mean, what were you saying was going to happen?
Well, I mean,
not a quid pro quo, but what was the threat?
Well, the threat is this. There's a lot of us who have benefited from the services of Planned Parenthood. I'm a man, but men indirectly benefit when there is an emergency and when a woman that you know, a woman that you love, a woman that you did love, it can be a lot of things, is pregnant, and you've got to somehow deal with that. And I said to them, are you trying to tell me that you're trying to shut that down? Because I wouldn't have a life today. And I was very direct. I said, I would not have a life today if it wasn't for Planned Parenthood. And you're telling me you're going to shut that down. No, you're not. Now, you better. And I think, Phil, it was just a matter of being very direct and telling them.
But there wasn't any, you didn't say, if you don't, this and that will happen.
Well, I think they knew that if they didn't, there would not be, there wouldn't be a talk show, a newspaper, a blog that I would not go on and spread as much bad will. And I'll just say it, filth.
Well, are you telling me you were going to attempt to slander Susan G. Komen?
No, I would never do that. But I would come up with the most gruesome things that I could think of from my experience. I don't know what they would be.
Truthful things?
They would have to be truthful. But I would look and see what truthful, gruesome, hideous things I could write about Susan G. Komen. I would do it.
So you really wanted to hurt them. If they did not keep that funding connected to a Planned Parenthood, you wanted to hurt them.
Just the way they wanted to hurt millions of American women and a lot of men like myself that, thank God, had them to turn to when I had, as I've said to you, Phil, the problems that I had with Cassie and Rebecca, who were two of my students, and unfortunate situations like that.
All right, we're going to be back here with Don Mix. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. So Don Mix was on the phone yesterday with a lot of other people, and they were talking to Susan G. Komen, and they were the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Susan G. Komen, by the way, was the sister of Nancy Brinker, who's the founder. Susan was her sister, who died of breast cancer. And they were saying, in no uncertain terms, you better turn that spigot of cash back on. Turn it on now, and don't even think about cutting off that funding. What do you think about that? The money is back. The Susan G. Komen Foundation is now funding Planned Parenthood again. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll be right back in the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I mean, I told him, I said, you don't piss me off.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, And we got Don Mixa on the line with us here from Seattle, Washington tonight. He's a professor of engineering at the University of Washington, and we're talking about the Susan G. Komen Foundation's decision to sort of reverse itself and give money to Planned Parenthood after they had said they would suspend those payments. And there were all kinds of different reasons given, Don. The first one was that they did not want to give money to a group that was under investigation, federal guidelines. The second reason was, well, they don't want to give money to any group that has this connection to abortion. And then the third one here we heard yesterday was, yes, we will.
Well, and I think, Phil, that they were fully intending on going with the first two reasons that you mentioned. I think that they had this guy Raffelli. I don't know who he is or what he is. Excuse me for saying that. I don't mean any disrespect, but I, you know, this guy John D. Raffelli. Every time I read his name in a newspaper, I said to Bob Clyde, and I said to Tucker Wheeler, I said, this is the problem right here, this guy Raffelli. And they said, well, who are you talking about? I said, this guy who I've seen this guy quoted twice now, and I said, that's two times too many for me. And I think when I say something like that, I know that both Bob Clyde and Tucker, they know what I'm talking about. And when I said I've seen his name two times, and that's two times too many for me, both of them put their pens down on their desks, got up, left the office, and I knew where they were going.
Where were they going?
Well, they were going over to our phone bank, and they were going to kick everybody in the rear end and tell them, okay, the word came down, Don wants us to get that money back. So I would tell you that that's what happened, and I think when Susan G. Komen got the word that this is unacceptable, UNACCEPTABLE, and I said to them, I said, spell it out for them. And they said, you're kidding. I said, no, I said, I mean, spell it out. Tell them it's unacceptable. As you say, Phil, the spigot of cash was turned back on.
877-876-PHIL. That's amazing. You know, even in the world of charity funding and in the world of charity fundraising, this kind of direct talk is it's quite interesting. Here is Jay on the Phil Hendry Show. Jay, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, I disagree with that gentleman, and you know, and respectfully. But I got two kids, and my first wife, when I was 23 years old, she got pregnant by me, and I lived in South Florida, and I moved to Chicago, and I raised that girl, and I got a son by the same woman, and she's 28 years old, and my son's 26 years old. And I think if I would have said, like most men, how do I know it's mine? For one, because she was a tourist girl, and I just met her, and we fell in love, you know. And I moved to Chicago from South Florida and married her, and I raised them kids. And I think that it's a rotten shame that that situation happened today. I think it was politically motivated. I think that the Obama administration is well, for one. It's a communist organization that's infiltrated the United States. So, and I think that this gentleman that's talking right there, for one thing, he needs
that's
to
very
clear
funny.
His throat. He
very
needs
funny.
To clear his throat, man. But all I'm saying
well,
man,
I mean,
is,
sorry. If you want to get personal, sir, I could probably say some things about you. Maybe you want to scrub the bacon strips out of your underwear, you know.
All right. Why do we talk like this?
Well, this gentleman is insulting me.
I think he said you need to clear your throat.
Well, you're insulting me because I'll tell you.
I didn't say anything to you. I didn't say anything to you.
You loved that woman and you were glad that she killed your kid. I married my. I married the woman that was the mother.
I tell you what, it's a good question, Jay. Hey, Jay, it's Phil. It's a good question. Don, do you want to comment on that?
Look, we're all different in this world. Jay's life is different from mine. You know, he sounds as if he's, you know. I'm a professor at a major university. I had, at the time, unfortunately, made two of my students pregnant. I loved both of them very much, but I could not. What am I? Am I going to start a family with one and not with the other? I had to insist that both women terminate the pregnancies.
All right, but now,
Jay, if you had my life, you'd understand that. But you don't have my life. You have a life where, you know, your wife tells you, oh, it's your kid and you believe her, which, okay, you know, and you call me weird.
Well, what are you saying?
No. Wait.
Well, I mean, the guy's like, well, you take my word for it.
You're a professor, okay? That what we're saying because
no.
You got a
no.
You
it doesn't mean that at all, sir.
You got a PhD, and I'm something special.
No, sir. If you don't like the fact that I had two girlfriends, that's.
Children, I chose not to kill my children. You chose to kill your children, so that
no,
makes you a
I did
murderer.
Not.
God bless you.
No, I didn't kill my children. I killed something that looked like shrimp cocktail, if you want to be honest.
Well, okay. You know what? Conception.
Oh, my God.
Hey, come on.
It
life
does.
Starts at conception, man. So blow
says,
it off.
Wait,
man. Okay,
well,
Mr. Professor.
Says who? Says
all right, Mr.
Says
professor, give me a break,
look,
man.
You
know,
said to me that I needed to clear my throat. You said to me that
nothing.
I needed to clear
and how old are you? How old are you? I just am curious. What's your age?
48.
I'm 52. And I've been around the block, and I know who lives on the block. And just,
well, I mean, you resent the fact that I have girlfriends. That's
no,
your
no,
problem.
No,
think,
I don't have a problem with that, man. I'm a journeyman carpenter. I'm an electrician. I'm a plumber, and I'm HVAC certified. And I wear many hats. And I work with my hands.
Well, that, all of that doesn't make you Hugh Hefner,
you work
though, you know.
With your mind, and you know what? Most of the professors, it should be ashamed of themselves because what they teach in the schools is ridiculous because they don't.
Well, can I tell you something?
Who the damn
most of you guys ought to be ashamed of yourselves because you ought to see some of the wiring that has gone into some of the houses I've owned by you clowns. So,
let's not call each other clown.
Well, I wouldn't doubt this guy wired the house. And I tell you, I really got to get the plumbing. God almighty, you got to take a snake to the plumbing that these guys put in there. If you say you're using copper, would you please use copper? You know?
All right, hold on. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445. Wow. World famous Phil Henry Show. Susan G. Komen has given the money back to Planned Parenthood, and Don says they just
Phil
told him to.
Better believe it.
This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Don Mixa joining us from Seattle as we talk about Susan G. Komen, the Susan G. Komen Foundation, reversing themselves and continuing the funding of Planned Parenthood. And this not 48 hours after they said that they would stop, that they were not going to fund Planned Parenthood because of this congressional investigation into their adherence to federal guidelines. The foundation said, well, you know, that's not a criminal investigation. We didn't want it to sound like it was, and we're not going to suspend the money. And Don, you have said you and others that support Planned Parenthood have been on the phone encouraging Susan G. Komen and the people that represent them to keep this money going. You talked about...
Absolutely. And I just wanted to say one other thing. I wanted to thank Todd Baring and some of the other people that I was talking to at the Susan G. Komen Foundation for getting it done so quickly. I mean, I told them it was urgent. I said, look, I don't know what you guys have planned for the weekend or if you have anything planned. A lot of people watch the Super Bowl. That's great. I'm not a football fan myself, but I said, I don't know what you people think you're going to do. But you're not doing anything until you get this done. And I made it very clear.
Now, you don't have any authority at Susan G. Komen other than the fact that you're just well-connected.
I don't have any authority anywhere other than the fact that I know what I'm doing. I know what I want, and I know what my constituents want. I want the people that my people and what we believe in. I represent my people. I lead my people. And what we believe in and what we want. Other people can do what they want. Other tribes, as we like to call them now. I don't know if you use that term, Phil, but that term has come back into usage. My tribe. You know what I mean about have a tribe?
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, it's not literal. It's like...
Well, it is to an extent. I have my tribe, and I am the, if you will, the chief of the tribe. And my people expect that the Planned Parenthood is going to keep money on hand to allow women to go in, abort a fetus, And I say it without, you know, I say that a lot of people shy away from that. I say it. When Cassie and Ellen went in and aborted two fetuses that were mine, I was sad, but I was relieved, and they were too, because it would have impacted their lives. It would have taken my life and sent it into a tailspin, to be perfectly honest with you.
And but, I mean, the fact that those were your children, like the guy said...
Well, hold on for a minute. Are you pro-choice?
Yes, I am. I wondered...
All right, well, then please don't talk like... You're starting to talk like one of those lifers. And I assumed I was on a radio show that was sympathetic. And
I do. Yes, I am pro-choice. I'm just telling you that when you talk about aborting these two fetuses like Cassie and Ellen, these are two girls that you were seeing at the same time. They were students.
Well, I should not have brought it up because you're starting to use that as a little bit of a wedge against me and my morality, Phil. And
No. I want to know what goes into the thinking. You know,
here's what went into the thinking. I have a book tour coming up. My book is coming out. My life is beginning to fall together for the first time since my divorce. And there's an awful lot of good things there. There's an awful lot of good things on the plate for Don Mixa. Don Mixa's, if you want to call it my ship, Don Mixa's ship is about to come in. And not only is my ship coming in, but it's a luxury liner. All right, and so if you think for 1 minute that I'm going to allow two women who love me, and I love them, but they did love me more, to have these two children, this immediately puts an end to the book tour. That's over. You can forget that. And God forgive me if my life was negatively impacted by those two children being born. To the point where the book tour is dead, and the book is dead. I mean, what if I, and I say, God forgive me, Phil, because I don't think I would ever do this, but what if I lost it, and I beat both of those children to death?
Or, oh, my God, what a thing to say.
Phil, I'm asking you, who is going to go to Susan G. Komen and say to them, Don Mixa just beat his two kids to death because you wouldn't fund Planned Parenthood? Okay.
That's a horrifying thing to even allow yourself to think. If I had two kids that I didn't want, or if you want to put it that way, or if were not convenient, or whatever, man, I mean, I'm just, that's the story, baby, and that's what you got to live with. And I, God forbid that would ever happen, but if that did, obviously you are not capable of living in the world with normal human beings. And
well, I think what you're doing is you're judging me. That's exactly what Susan G. Komen wants you to do, to judge me. And I'm asking you, Phil, I'm not saying that I wouldn't be culpable. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm asking you, where does Susan G. Komen, when did they step up to the plate and say, all right, we're also here. We need to get tied to a post and beaten, too, because of what we did to Mixa that caused him to beat those two children to death and hide their bodies, in a closet or behind some garbage cans or whatever I would do.
And Don, are you listening to what you're saying?
I beg your pardon?
Are you listening to what you're saying? Do you hear what you're saying?
Yes, I am hearing it, Phil.
Well, you're saying things that have nothing to do now with the politics of this or even the morality or the legality. You're talking crazy. You're talking about killing.
I am, if you will listen to me, please.
I'm listening to you. You said that if Planned Parenthood wasn't around and those two children were born because you couldn't, the two girls couldn't have abortions. I don't know why they couldn't. They could go to a doctor. And
they couldn't afford it. I can't. They couldn't afford it.
They couldn't afford it, meaning you're not going to pay for it. All right, let me get a phone call up here. 877-876-PHIL. I just find the way that you phrase this moral dilemma very strange. Lou, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Don Mixa. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Well, I mean,
good morning, sir.
The gentleman's entitled to speak the way he wants. I don't necessarily agree with his way of expressing, but that's his way. I think I will commend him for standing up. I think it's, there is truly a silent majority in America that's basically tired of conservatives trying to impart their way of thinking upon all of us. The gentleman they called in, for example, if you don't want to have an abortion and you had your two children, then good for you. But anyone who wants to have one, they should be entitled to do that. That is between them their doctor, their conscience, and their God. Period.
Absolutely.
Nobody has
Absolutely.
A right to impart their quote-unquote. And I'm tired of conservatives with their hypocrisy. You've got William Bennett wagging his finger in our face about morality. It turns out he's a gambleholic. You've got Palin talking about family values, and she's got a minor daughter who's impregnated under her roof. You've got
Congress
talking about family values, and the woman he's married to right now was a page while he was impeaching Clinton. He was renting out with that girl who's not his wife. So enough of it. You live your life, your consequences of your actions, but don't try to impart your views upon all of us. And it's been a good week.
And I think also, Lou, I was going to say, Lou, that Phil, in his judgment, his rusted judgment of me, I'm saying, if those two children are born and my life comes to a point where I beat them to death, who goes to Susan G. Komen and says, you're the ones that cut off funding to Planned Parenthood? But Phil won't allow. Yeah. Thank you.
Are you honestly trying to tell me?
Are you trying to tell me? Pardon me?
I want to ask Don. Are you trying to tell me that if you beat two children to death, you'd immediately ask, hey, if Planned Parenthood had been here, this wouldn't have happened?
I think it's a fair question to ask.
Oh, come on, man. Come on.
Excuse me, Lou, this is what I'm dealing with. We got a lot of these fake liberals. We got a lot of fake liberals like Mr. Henry.
I'm not beating any children to death, but I am an advocate of people being able to make their own decisions without being judged.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm tired of
that is my point, exactly.
Hypocrisy. And it's grandstanding. You know, there are a lot of kids out here who are unwanted, unloved. They turn out to be criminals. They turn out to have miserable lives. And where are the Republican conservatives of those kids? They're bad.
Well, that's a very good point.
You've got services supporting these kids.
Well, see, that is my point, too. And that's what I was telling Phil. I said, look, Phil, you can let these children live, just as Lou has said. They turn into criminals. I think you remember the Christmas Carol written by Charles Dickens when the ghost of Christmas present reveals the two children. He says, this is poverty and this is ignorance. And the worst of these is ignorance, because that's the child that grows up to become the criminal. If I beat that kid to death, what would you do, Phil? Would you give me an award or would you send me to prison?
I'd send you to prison. I'd send you to a mental institution.
Well, you don't get it at all.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not an advocate of beating any children to death. That's not where I'm coming from at all. I'm simply saying.
You said you
understood.
You said you understood. Wait, you said you understood what I was saying.
I'm not an advocate of beating any children to death. I'm not an advocate. That's not what this conversation was about. It's about Susan G.
Well, but, sir, you said that I had my choice.
It's a microcosm of society today. There's a camp of conservatives that think that their way is the only way, and they should impart their way upon all of us. And there are those of us who say, I will keep my way in my household, you keep your way in your household, and you make the decisions that are best for you. And that's what it's come down to.
I'm a little confused because I thought this gentleman supported my right to choose.
I don't think he's saying he supports your right to choose beating a child to death.
Well, he did say it was my decision, and he's now changing his tune, so I don't know where he stands.
It is your decision, but you have to pay the consequences for your actions also. And obviously, consequences are going to be very favorable to you for beating
And what about Planned Parenthood? What about Planned Parenthood? Where do they...
Planned Parenthood is not going to figure in that equation, I don't think. Sir, thank you very much for your call. Thank you, Lou. I appreciate that. 877-876-PHIL. How does Planned Parenthood figure in that?
This gentleman that I was talking to, Lou, said that it is my decision. If the birth of these two children was so consequential and was so injurious that I had to at some point, not because it was legal or because I was sane, but because I had to beat them to death, and he said that was my decision. Now he's going back on that.
No, he's not saying that you have a right to it. He said that's going to be a decision. You got to live with those consequences. That's what he's saying. And I think that and what you said, when you said that, if Planned Parenthood wasn't there, then those children are born, and then what happens if I have to beat them to death? That's what you said. Who goes to who goes to Susan G. Komen and says, look what you did, look what you caused me to do? That's ridiculous.
877-876-PHIL. Good Lord. Don Mixa with us. He is a professor of engineering at University of Washington. He's also with the faculty and student Progressive Alliance. He also has a book coming out. And according to him, his life is doing really, really well. And thank God Planned Parenthood is back up and running with that Susan G. Komen money, because without it, why, his two girlfriends couldn't have gotten abortions, and he'd be out there raising two kids instead of out on his book tour. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back on the world famous Phil Henry Show. We have Don Mixa with us. Next hour is our news and information hour. After the show tonight, if you're a backstage pass holder, join us on Phil TV and HD. We will remain on the web feed and do a Q&A. We'll do a question and answer with our many BSPs, Phil fans, and, you know, general and sundry flotsam and jetsam. Right now we have with us Don Mixa from the University of Washington. And I, Don, you know, I've heard a lot of comments pro and con when it comes to the abortion issue. I've never heard a man say that if, because of the stress and the strain of having two children...
Hold on, Phil, because you didn't hear me properly.
Well, yeah, well, hold on. Tell me if I didn't... If I didn't hear this, you tell me. The stress and the strain of having two children by your two girlfriends... If you beat those kids to death, Susan G. Komen's got to answer for it.
No, I am saying that if I was emotionally distraught enough to do something like that, then at some point, yes, after I was psychoanalyzed and after I was deemed unfit to stand trial or fit to stand, whichever, even if I was acquitted, at some point you've got to bring Susan G. Komen into the mix and say, Does Don Mixa beat these kids and throw them out of a car at a high rate of speed? And Susan G. Komen does not answer for it. Does Don Mixa hide the bodies of these children in a forest? And Susan G. Komen does not answer for it. Does Don Mixa cut open the interior of a sofa and stuff the kids' bodies in there? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, what I'm getting here is, boy, you know all kinds of ways of disposing bodies, don't you?
You know what I'd ask you to do, Phil, is grow up and listen to me. And
well, you know, hiding in a forest, throwing them out of a car, and it's all Susan G. Komen.
No, I didn't say that. I said, what part of that does Susan G. Komen answer for? Would you please, in the name of God, and no matter what religion you are adherent to, Phil... In the name of God, we can agree on God, can't we?
All right.
All right, please. In the name of God and whatever Messiah or prophet you care to attribute to that God, would you please, in the name of Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, you know, we go down the line, listen to me. See, it's almost like in the name of God and fill in the blank, would you please listen to me?
I'm listening.
At what point does Susan G. Komen answer for... All right, the skeletons that they found, whatever you want to put it. That's my question.
877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Henry Show. Let's get to some phone calls here. Dean, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please. Dean is gone. Let's go to Eric. Eric, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Phil. Dan, I'm sad to say this,
yes,
but... You're right. I'm a pro-choice. It's no one else's business but your own. But when it
Absolutely.
Comes to the actual corporation that you're looking for the funding to get the pro-choice or the Planned Parenting, that's completely up to them too. They could just pull their funding and say F it all, and then you have no right to stand there and yell
well,
at them.
You do have a right to. You do have a right to. You do have a right to expose why. You do have a right to expose why. If it's political, you have a right to expose that. Yeah, well, that's what it was, political.
And that is. It is a political standpoint because the government's pushing their nose too far into our own businesses nowadays. They need to step back and take their nose out of our business. I'm a truck driver, so I'm a renegade by choice.
Right.
I run out here every night. drive around.
Right.
It's the way it is. I move freight.
Right.
But that's my choice. I wouldn't expect you to say have the same viewpoint because you chose a different job profession. That's the way it is.
Wait, hello?
Yeah.
No, I know you. Don, are you there?
What?
No, it's,
what, are you sleeping?
I nodded out.
Anyway, Eric, thank you, sir. Very good call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Al here. Al, you're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Don Mixa.
How you doing, Phil?
Good, sir. Good.
Well, I'd like to ask this. I cannot believe he's a professor, and he's dating two girls at once, and he managed to get them both pregnant at the same time. That's just unbelievable to me.
Well, you know, I can't explain the facts of life to you right now, but maybe someday your father will.
Well,
all right, so what's the point? What's the point of your call, sir? What's the point of your call, sir?
He doesn't know how girls are made. He doesn't know how you get girls pregnant. I can't tell him.
Hey, whatever, man.
And
what are you talking about?
What are you talking about, you idiot?
You're talking about beating your kids to death, man.
Well, then what is this thing about me getting two girls pregnant at the same time? You don't know how I did that. Did you take health in high school?
No.
Did you take biology? Did you go to high school?
No, man, that wasn't my point. I don't think you understand.
Well, then what? No, you didn't express it very well.
Well,
I said I was going out with two girls at the same time.
Well, I don't understand.
I'm not
so
very
bright.
You're the guy that doesn't know how babies are made, but I'm not very bright. Anyway, I was going out with two girls, and I got them both pregnant. And they both had to have abortions. And shut up. I'm telling you something. And they both had to have abortions. And they both had to have abortions. And then...
all right, hold on for a minute. You're both talking at the same time. I'm asking you, the guy I got on the phone here, who's this, Al? Is that your name?
Yeah.
Okay, what did you want to say, Al? You might not have started all that well asking how he made girls pregnant. You didn't want to ask that, did you?
Yes, he did.
No,
but just to let him talk.
Man, this guy likes to throw people off, man. He also likes to talk over people, so, you know,
We're out of time. No, hear the music. Out of time. Because you had to start off with a dumb thing like how are girls made pregnant. Wow.
No, man, whatever.
You butchered it, man.
You 3 minutes and cut me off. Just like
no,
you're
dude,
doing now.
You start... No, you started off by saying, how did I make two girls pregnant? Didn't you ask that? You did.
Just like you guys.
And now we're out of time.
On this show with all your fake little characters that you play over and over.
That guy asked me, how are two girls made pregnant? Didn't he?
He asked. Okay, well, now we're out of time.
Yeah, that's what I tried to tell the dumbass.
Shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, and that makes them mad, and that's just where that's at. And we don't like talk radio around here. We don't like talk radio because we don't think talk radio has anything to do with truth. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, okay? It's a form of entertainment that we've decided to satirize, and we do that because we have we want to mock it. We want to make fun of it. We want to bring it down. We want to insult it. We want to make fun of the lazy people that are the hosts. We want to make fun of the ignorant people that are the hosts on talk radio. Ignorant. Stupid people who pretend to have an erudition and an education that they don't have.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we stand for anything, that's what we stand for in this show. It is a satire of talk radio. And the fans of this show understand that. And, you know, look, it's a satire of everything. One of the things about this radio show that I think has gotten... that makes it, I think, unique and also upsets people in a different way. We are not on this show, we're not about mocking powerful people. That's already been done, and it's done well by some,
and not so well by others. In fact, it's done well by a very few people and not so well by most everybody else. Making fun of the president, big deal. Making fun of the Congress, big deal. Making fun of the this and the that and the this and that. I think personally I find that boring. Making fun of the foibles and weaknesses and hypocrisies of the average person, now to me, that's fun. I mean, I don't think I'm a sadistic person, but I like to go places where other, you know, maybe other shows have not gone. So we do that the way we do it. And the reason for that is because, A, we don't listen to or enjoy the phony baloney political talk that goes on in American radio. In fact, I think it's been bad for radio, and it'll be a good day when some of these people finally start getting honest and start talking about things they know something about, as opposed to pretending to be conservative or pretending to be liberal. So that'll be a great day in American radio when those radio shows either go away or start getting serious. All right, so we don't like that. And we feel so strongly about it that we have created a radio show that mocks that and other media and the people that take that kind of stuff seriously. So if you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. If you do like it, here we are. And you can also join us on our website at philhenryshow.com. Now, at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 a.m. Eastern, we're going to be doing a Q&A on our website at philhenryshow.com. In the news feed, you will see a place where you can enter your questions. And we haven't opened that up yet, but we're going to hear in about, 5 minutes or so, bud?
Yeah, to go to the first break.
In the first break, we will open up a section where you can enter in your questions for us during our Q&A, and that will commence at 1. It'll probably go about a half an hour, and I do promise you that this time out, because the previous ones we've done, I take like forever over one answer, and I don't think that's what you guys want, so I'll try and get to the answers as quickly as I can. On Sunday, the Super Bowl, and it will be Sunday Football with Phil. Join us on our website at philhenryshow.com, Phil TV and HD. We will be watching the game together, having a couple of pops, watching the Patriots and Giants, as we have done at various times during the regular season. Sunday Football with Phil on Sunday. Check your local listings for the start time of the game, because that's when we will we'll hit the web feed. We're not going to do any pregame, man. We will be, boom, hitting the air right at kickoff or thereabouts, and that'll be Sunday. It's all over there at philhenryshow.com. Join us. It's always, you know, a really groovy time. Plus, we got some really cool stuff coming out in the shop, don't we, bud?
Yeah, well, better not say. We've got a pretty good item coming up for summer.
We do. We've got a couple of cool things. So go over to our merchandise store and check out what we have there. All right. This story I thought was pretty interesting. It is about Demi Moore, the actress. And Demi Moore is interesting, I think, because she's going through something that a lot of people go through. I've been through it. You've been through it. She is experiencing the ending of a marriage. It's not fun. It sucks, especially when things end the way they ended for her, and maybe they've ended that way for you. You know, when you find out that your partner has not been faithful, that is a bitch, you know.
That son of a bitch, man.
Yep, it is. And when you find out your partner, who is younger than you, is cheating on you with younger women, and you're a Demi Moore who, you can say what you want about her acting or what you think of her personality, public personality. I've always been struck by how I think she's a decent woman, and I only gather that from the Twitter feed. You know, the way that she and her husband would talk to each other seemed like a nice person, and she also, is very active in charitable giving. But even if she wasn't, I mean, who deserves that? Now, she's had a rough few months. You know, she almost, convulsed herself right into the hereafter with whatever the hell that was that she was smoking. What was that?
Well, it's called whipping, man. I think it's like nitrous oxide.
Nitrous oxide. I still don't understand how you smoke that, but nonetheless, Now the rumor is that she is she's ready to start dating again. And what have they got her hooked up with? They got her hooked up with this guy, Zac Efron, 24 years of age. And I love this line. Despite her recent health trouble, she's actively pursuing him. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not. But I'll tell you one thing. If she wanted to get Ashton pissed off or jealous or however she wants to make, that was a good move.
Yeah, because the guy's younger than him.
Yeah, this guy is much younger than Ashton Kutcher. And obviously, Ms. Moore knows what she's doing if she wants to drive Ashton Kutcher clean out of his cooch, man. Now, it's a strange rebound romance. But Moore apparently is hooking up with this High School Musical star to either cure what ails her or piss off Kutcher. And I don't know anything about their marriage other than to say the way that it ended is I can understand how it was rough for her. And, you know, maybe he could have had a little bit more class in the way all of that went down. And if this drives him to suicide, maybe it's a good thing. I don't know.
Think it will?
Well, I'm kidding. I don't want it to drive him to suicide, but, you know, maybe it'll drive him to... Wouldn't that be interesting, though?
Well, you know, it'd be interesting to me, man, if they arrest him on a DUI and he, like, break down crying or something out on PCH.
Yeah, that'd be bitching.
What do you mean?
But if the CHP pull him over and go, yeah, you're under arrest, we'll do an iron swine about it.
You'll do an iron swine about it?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We'll do an iron swine when I do the break.
All right, then we have an iron swine coming up, and what will this be, bud?
It'll be the CHP pulling over Ashton Kutcher when he drank too much.
And he drank too much because why?
Because he found out about,
Oh, he found out about Demi Moore going out with this Efron guy.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so that's Iron Swine coming up here in moments here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And also on our homepage, don't forget to enter in your question for our Q&A. That will be up. That blog will be up during that break as well. So the very best of luck to you, Ms. Moore. And if you want to know our further comment on that, listen to Iron Swine here just moments away. This is our news and information hour. The jobless rate has fallen to 8.3%. They say that alters the face of the campaign. We will see. And more news to get to here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, including something that just... I said it today on Twitter. I've never been so close to joining a lynch mob as I was today when I found out that the police have arrested a second teacher in that Miramonte Elementary School caper, that disgusting scandal that we'll tell you about. If you haven't heard it, you better get ready to have your stomach pumped. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
And now time for another edition of Iron Swine. Iron Swine is going to go on the highway.
Yeah, this Iron Swine, I'm going to go out on the highway and look for drunk driver.
Iron Swine is doing drunk driver. He's doing drunk driver duty. Ring, ring, ring.
Yeah, this is Iron Swine.
Yeah, man, there's somebody out here on the road. He's drunk.
Drunk, huh?
Yeah.
Here comes Iron Swine. And then a siren goes on.
Yeah, there is Iron Swine up there.
Hey, pull over. I'm Iron Swine.
Yeah?
What's your name?
Oh, man, my name is Ashton Kutcher.
Ashton Kutcher, are you the guy that was married to that lady?
Yeah, I was married to Demi Moore.
Yeah, that's the lady, right?
Yeah, she's like a movie actress.
Yeah, that's right. What a douchebag. You cheated on her and everything.
Yeah, I feel bad, man. I feel real bad.
How come you were driving like a douche?
On account of this.
Aha, peach schnapps. Look at that, Jägermeister. You're under arrest.
This has been Iron Swine, and he arrested Ashton Kutcher drinking...
It was peach schnapps.
You're drinking peach schnapps and going fast.
Because he felt bad about... messing over that lady, Demi Moore.
Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, why do you always have to ask, is that it?
Because I never know if you guys are done. Very good.
Yeah, well, that's Iron Swine.
All right, so that Iron Swine, that episode of Iron Swine, ladies and gentlemen. They arrest Ashton Kutcher for drunk driving. Peach schnapps, huh?
Yeah, he had a cooler in the front seat. Yeah, he had chilled peach schnapps.
Yeah, he was chasing it with a beer.
Ooh!
What?
Ooh! He's chasing peach schnapps with a beer? Good God.
Yeah, man, I mean, the guy's hardcore.
Well, that ain't hard. I wouldn't call that hardcore.
Are you kidding me? Peach schnapps will mess you up two times.
Oh, get out of here with your peach schnapps. God, talk about wretch. Yeah, have some peach schnapps, and here's a Coors Light. Blah! All right, anyway, very good, guys. Thank you for that. Well, see, that's Iron Swine will show you. Iron Swine, in my opinion, shows you the future or the possibilities, right?
Yeah, it shows you what could happen if you continue to go down the highway of doucheness.
What?
It shows you what happens when you go down the highway of doucheness. All right. The jobless rate has fallen to 8.3%, altering the face of the campaign. So says the New York Times. By the way, I had a thought today, not for nothing, but if the NBA insists on keeping basketball teams in markets like Charlotte, Charlotte's a great city, great football city, it's a great basketball state, North Carolina, but for whatever reason, the NBA's had a hard time making a go of it in the city of Charlotte. They have the Bobcats. I was thinking if we replace that O in Bobcat with a U, you got the Bubcats, and that's not too far of a leap to Bubba Cats. What do you think, Bud Dickman?
Sex.
All right.
Yeah, it sucks.
All right, fine. Jobless rate falls to 8.3%. The burst of job growth in January gives President Obama a fresh but tricky opportunity to revise the grim economic narrative of his presidency while offering Mitt Romney a choice, embrace a new optimism or campaign against a sinking economy even as it shows signs of turning around. Now, this is the New York Times writing this, so please keep it in mind. And when I say keep it in mind, in the very first paragraph, they sort of tip their hand. They've given Mitt Romney a choice that is not his only choice. Maybe that's what the New York Times thinks. I'm sure. Embrace a new optimism. That means that he's going to have to say, boy, things are really great. President Obama's doing a good job, huh? Ain't going to happen. Romney's got plenty of room to move. Don't worry about it, New York Times. It's not campaign against a sinking economy, even as it shows signs of turning around. No. What he would be saying is the turnaround is not enough. The turnaround is anemic. The turnaround is a Democrat turnaround. It ain't a Republican turnaround. It's not a business turnaround. It's not a long, you know, lots of stuff he can do. The Labor Department reported on Friday that the unemployment rate had fallen all the way back to the level of President Obama's first full month in office, 8.3%, from a high of 10% in late 2009. Yet unemployment also remains higher than it has been for any presidential election since the Great Depression. Those dueling realities and improving economy that remains very weak creates serious risks for the top political advisors to President Obama and Mr. Romney as they begin to grapple with the impact of Friday's report. I can't remember the unemployment ever being that high in my lifetime, so they're right. I was wondering...
What was it back when you were talking about Carter and the misery index?
The misery index of Carter was, if I'm not mistaken, inflation, unemployment, and the consumer price. Am I right about that? Maybe. Maybe it was just inflation and unemployment. I think that was the misery index that Jimmy Carter talked about when he was running against Gerald Ford in 76. And, of course, it was unfortunate for Jimmy Carter that he ever even thought up the misery index because by 1980, Ronald Reagan was using it against him because it was worse in 1980 than it had been in 1976. The Republican Party has been treating the Obama presidency as if it's Jimmy Carter Part 2. And there were a lot of people, including me, that thought if Obama doesn't do a good job, that's exactly what it's going to be. But if Obama shows that the numbers in November of 2012 are better than they were when he became president, that ain't Jimmy Carter. And I failed to say this yesterday, and I really wanted to, but that doesn't mean anything. I know you guys won't believe me, but there are people now who believe with that kind of an improvement, Obama will be reelected. I've been feeling that, and I'll tell you why. Let me just say this. If Obama is doing such a glaringly lousy job, you would think that the Republican Party would know exactly what it wanted to do to cure the problem. But the Republicans here in this primary season have been going at this thing scattershot. You got Ron Paul over here. You got Newt Gingrich, who hates Mitt Romney's guts. You got Santorum, who doesn't like Romney all that much either. You got the same dynamic this year that you had back in 2008. You got a Republican Party that's at war with itself between the conservatives and the moderates. And the conservatives insist that they are the heart and soul of the conservative party, and or the Republican Party, and therefore they're the ones that need to be the voice, the face of the party to go up against Obama. And what conservatives don't understand, right or wrong, good or bad, and let's say you're the greatest people in the world and you have the answers. Let's say you have the answers. You ain't going to get elected president. Conservative is not going to win against Obama. It won't happen. Why do you think Obama got elected in the first place? Because everybody's in love with liberals? No. Obama got elected in the first place because he was the more moderate of the two. You think that McCain was a moderate, a lot of Republicans would call McCain a very moderate voice. No. In the view of the American people in general, McCain was too far right. Obama was right down the middle. Now, that's the truth. Forget about whether you Republican versus Democrat. We always hear about independents, you know.
You talk about independents, they thought Obama was like middle of the road?
Yes, yes, yes. He was the guy that made sense. Obama was the guy that seemed to be cool, calm, and collected, a guy who was sober, a guy that was, you know, playing it right down the middle, playing it nice and cool, a guy that had the answers. He wasn't some, you know, a scattershot, nervous wreck like a lot of these Republicans come off as. I'm telling you. That's why. And so along comes this new election season, and there are the Republicans again, man, doing battle with each other, not figuring, they don't know who they are, what they are. You got Gingrich and these guys, and they finally figured it out, though, you know. And
well, yeah, they don't want to be conservative.
No, exactly. The Republicans have finally figured this out. They have finally said, these guys are bad news. Gingrich is bad news. Santorum ain't going to get elected dog catcher. We got to present to the American people that good old-fashioned Main Street cloth coat Republicanism that was in his better days, Richard Nixon's thing before Watergate happened and the whole thing fell through. But and Ford and guys like that. We don't want these arch conservatives, you know.
Well, I still think he's going to get his butt kicked by Obama on account of he's Mormon.
Yeah, but Obama, he might be Muslim.
Yeah, that's right. Obama's Muslim and Romney's Mormon, and so that's the big thing. You guys are just as dumb today as you were when he got elected. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You're welcome, bud.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We'll be right back here in our News and Information Hour. Don't go away. PhilHendryShow.com for our Q&A tonight.
Phil Hendry.
Here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. By the way, I just posted, we just posted the question here section on the news feed on our website, philhendryshow.com, so you'll see it. It simply says for the question and answer for Phil, put your questions here, and there's a picture of me with a space helmet on.
Why?
I don't know why. Just that's the picture of me that's there.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, though.
It doesn't have to make sense. It was an available picture of me. I'm wearing a space helmet. What, are you going to make an issue out of that now?
Yeah, but it didn't make any sense that the people are going to go, what's it about, you know?
Yeah, it's like it disorients them.
Oh, get out of here. Disorient them.
They're all in a heap. They're confused.
Yeah, that's it. Is this where I ask Phil questions? Oh, wait a second. That's a picture of Phil in a space helmet. Oh, I'm all confused.
Well, I mean, you're laughing about it, man, but a lot of people have said, just a picture of Phil. That way we know it's him, and that's, you know.
Yeah, it's like it's a good signpost of what to do.
I think you guys are full of crap.
What?
I don't think you get any questions like that at all. Give us a picture of Phil looking normal. It's a signpost for what to do. I don't buy it, not for 1 cent, not for 1 brass farthing. All right, a couple of things. Number one, don't really like to use the radio show to make personal announcements, but to my godson, Joe, look, dude, I know you're disappointed in the performance of the Lakers this year. I am too. You know, I'm not a Clipper fan. I never will be. I appreciate that they're a basketball team that play in L.A., and I'm sorry they got Chris Paul, but you can't obsess over it over and over and over again, morning, noon, and night on your Twitter feed. Everything with this guy, man.
What you talking about now?
Oh, you know, the ref blew this call and that and this, that, this, that. You know, and the Clippers did this, the Clippers did that. Look, let's just be honest about something, okay? The NBA, as a business enterprise, as a business proposition, has decided that they want to go in a certain direction. And what is that direction? They want to embrace not only large markets, but they want to make the small and the medium markets go as well. They've had great success in towns like Orlando. They've had great success in towns like Salt Lake City, Phoenix, San Antonio. These are not major markets, but they're great basketball cities. Now, for whatever reason, stadiums this, I don't know, demographic, you know, Charlotte, New Orleans, you know, ain't making it. It ain't happening, baby. And some of these other markets, they're just not making a go of it. Times are tough. I don't know. Maybe it's a, you know, there was a time way, way back in the early days of organized professional sports when they used to contract leagues. They did it all the time. All the time. Every year, maybe every 3 years, 2-3 teams gone. You know, they were out to like this many teams. You know, can't support it. You know, they're not keeping up. Goodbye, you're gone. You know, and they would contract the size of the league. Not the NBA or the NHL, man. They don't want to do that. Not Major League Baseball. No way. Not anymore, man. These guys, they cannot fathom that. So what they want to do instead is they'll do anything to make these teams profitable, to make these teams successful, to ensure that these smaller market teams are. At least they've got a fighting chance, even if it means the big teams take it in the shorts, like the Lakers and the Chris Paul deal. You know?
You're going to complain about that?
Yes, I'm going to complain about that. That was a deal that the Lakers had. That's why the Lakers are a great team, man. That's why they are one of the golden franchises of the NBA, one of the greatest along with the Celtics and a few others, because they know what they're doing. Now the NBA steps in and says, well, oh, I see. You don't want us to have a good team in Los Angeles because you think the chump change out here will just go and watch any kind of basketball. Is that what you think? Because I got news for you, man. No, we won't. You know, this whole thing about having team loyalty, there's a reason why I'm loyal to the L.A. Lakers. You want to know why? Why do you think that is?
Oh, because they're in L.A.?
No, wrong. Got nothing to do with it. Why do you think it is?
Well, I mean,
because they win.
Yeah, but that's not being loyal to a team.
That's exactly being loyal to a team. When they win, I love them. When they don't, they suck. I don't want to have anything to do with them. This stuff about Fairweather fan, let me tell you something, man. I don't know about anybody out there, and maybe this is heresy, but when a team ain't winning, I don't owe them a nickel of my money. I'm not going to go watch them play. I don't owe them anything. And if you think I'm going to throw my hard-earned money away in some garbage can ball club that can't dragging their asses up and down the court every night, and can't play basketball, I ain't going to go and see it, period. There's enough people in Los Angeles that will to keep a ball club here. There ain't enough of those people in places like Charlotte and New Orleans. People stay away from lousy products, whether it's bad food, whether it is a bad suit of clothes, you know, whether it's a lousy car, and bad sports teams. Money is too, especially these days, is too precious, too valuable. And this jazz about, oh, Fairweather fans, you know, through the... You know, I got news for you, man. I mean, that's when I was like a little kid, that's what I did. Not now, not as an adult. I'm not going to waste my time.
my ball clubs, I go to watch them when they're winning. When they stink, well, you ain't got to get me in this seat. What the hell do you think this is?
Yeah, but you have season tickets to Rams.
I had season tickets to the Rams. I'll keep the season tickets. You know, I'll keep the season tickets.
Well, that seat out right there, what does that mean?
It means I'll keep the season tickets and I'll sell the seats to some poor guy that wants to go see that garbage. I'll keep them because I ain't going to give them up in case the team turns it around. What the hell, do you think I'm stupid? But you think I'm going to go watch that stuff? I ain't going to watch it, and I'm going to get my money back. I'll go out and scalp that stuff, man. I'll go out, I'll scalp it, I'll make a profit, and when the team starts to turn it around, then I'll go and watch them. But if you think for 5 seconds I'm going to go out and sit there with this whole Fairweather fan, and aren't you a loyal fan, and boy, you're only here when they win, you better believe it, man. And if you think I'm ashamed of that, think again.
Man, I don't know. You know, a lot of people, they go out there when the team loses, and they show that they love them, you know. And
yeah, what about you just talking about Canada on account of that one on a documentary?
What?
When in Canada was getting their butts beat.
Wait a minute, man. That's a different story. That's a different thing entirely. You talking about the Canada series?
When they played to Russia.
Yeah. That was the series they were playing against Russia, the Summit series, okay? It was a best of eight. And they were getting their ass handed to them through the first four games, so?
Yeah, well, are you going to give up then?
That's different, bud. That's not a whole season. That's not two or three seasons in a row. That's different. That's a championship series, if you will. It was an exhibition, but it was definitely a major series for the Canadian and Russian players. And it was very, very big for the fans on both sides. I mean, that was huge. That was Canadian hockey, which was considered to be the greatest in the world. And all of a sudden, here come these Russians thinking that they're going to take them on. And the Canadians went into that series thinking, oh, this is going to be easy, baby. You know, make sure my car is, the engine's warmed up and my car is parked at the locker room door because I'm going to want to, you know, get out of here fast and go get a steak. Yes, sir, you got it. Okay, this won't take long. And the Canadians hit the ice thinking they were going to brush these guys aside. Well, guess what?
Yeah, so you're going to give up on them?
No, man, because, bud, that's not the same thing.
Not the same thing, not like on a season.
See, here's the thing. If you're talking about a season-long, stinking, rotten team, or two seasons, three seasons, or a team that, like, you know, some of these clubs, man, I mean, look at some of this crap that people put up with. Year in and year out, they stink, and people go to see that stuff. That's what I'm talking about. But if you're talking about like a championship series like that, and Bud's talking about, because he saw it with me, Phil Esposito was on the film, and he said, we're really disappointed in the fans. We can't believe, because the Canadians turned on them. The Canadian fans turned on the Canadian team and said, you guys suck. You're obviously not as good as we thought. You're a disgrace. You're a disgrace to the national game. I mean, you know, this was a bad thing. The Canadian team was carrying on their shoulders the reputation of the country that invented hockey, the country that was the home, the matrix of hockey. And the Canadians were down 2-1 with one tie. So that's how many games? That's four. All right. You got to win 5, and in this case, they'd have to win 4. And they'd have to, they still have to win 4. They still have to win 5 with one tie. So, you know, the Canadian fans were turning on them, and Esposito gave that TV interview just before they went to Russia. They played the first four games in Canada. They played them in Montreal. I think they played in Toronto. They played in Winnipeg, and then they played in Vancouver. And then they went to Russia, and they played all four of those games in Moscow. And the Canadians, before they left Canada, got on TV like Esposito, and he said, God, you know, we're breaking our asses here. We're breaking our asses here. You know, these guys are good. You know, the Russians brought over with them the Russian style of hockey. The Canadians didn't know from these fast skating, these transitions, you know, in basketball, they call it a fast break, this kind of transition hockey the Russians were playing fast as hell. Their conditioning was unbelievable. The freaking Canadians were like a bunch of old men out there, you know. And here are the Russians handling the puck like they'd never seen teams handle a puck like this, passing the way they did, the skating. The conditioning was emphasized in Russian hockey. The conditioning, being able to get up and down the ice. Canadians, they were blown away.
What did they do?
Well, what they did was, when they realized they had
a fight on their hands, they went back to North American hockey. And basically what they did to slow down this fast Russian game was they kept the puck on the boards. So they did not let the puck get out into open ice. They kept battling for it along the boards. And they started beating up on the Russians. I mean, they knocked some teeth out. And the Russians had not played that kind of a game. Okay.
But, yeah, but they said they were going to get off the ice.
Well, the Russians didn't know how to respond to that. At one point, they tried to pull the team off the ice. And the referee said, there's really nothing that they're doing that's illegal. They're checking your guys pretty hard. And, I mean, you know, the Canadians did. I mean, they were checking these guys on the boards, body checks. I mean, slamming these guys, leaving guys laid out on the ice. So what happened was this. The Russians learned the North American game, which is a muscle game, and the Canadians learned the Russian game, which was a fast, emphasized passing and puck handling and skating. It was a brand new thing, and those two types of hockey were incorporated by each side. Today, you've got Russian players here in the NHL playing North American hockey, and those guys mix it up with the best of them. You got Russian players over here, they will throw down with anybody. I mean, they've learned over the course of 30-plus years that that's what you do over here. And you have teams now that are phenomenal skating teams and puck-handling teams. That's what came of that Summit Series. It was...
Yep, who wound up winning?
Well, the Canadians wound up winning. The Canadians wound up winning. But I got to tell you, the Canadians wound up winning by one of the dirtiest things you've ever seen.
Well, about that guy broke that guy's ankle.
Yeah, when Bobby Clark, the famous guy with no teeth from the Flyers, he slashed the number one skater on the Russian side. I forget the guy's name. He basically slashed this guy's ankle and broke his ankle with his stick. And it's all on tape. And Bobby Clark hasn't denied it. And the Russians know it happened. And the Canadians know they did it. And by knocking that guy out, they took a big piece of the Russian firepower with them. And the Canadians wound up winning the series. But Bobby Clark knew exactly what he was doing. That guy was on a break out ahead of him. He was all alone with the goalie. And there's Clark. He's the only guy left. And he took that stick. And I mean, wham.
Busted his ankle.
He busted his ankle with that stick. So that's North American, that's Canadian hockey. And they beat them using that muscle game, but they also learned a valuable lesson, man. They had to adjust, really. And what they did to adjust to that speed game is they just took the puck away from the Russians and kept it on the board, made them fight for the puck, made them go around behind the net and fight for it there, made them fight for it between the blue lines. And I don't know anything about hockey, but that much I understand, you know.
Yeah, and you said they stole their beer.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. The Canadians got to Moscow, and the first thing they noticed, they had brought over 400 cases of beer. 400 cases of beer! And it was almost all gone. The freaking Russians stole their beer. So that already had them in a bad mood. So they're going for their beer, and I think they stole like half of it. They had 400 cases of beer, and the Russians stole like 200 cases, and that really hacked them off. So they weren't in any mood when they finally went to those games. So there's the story, and I didn't even mean to go into that story. It's a very interesting story. If you want to see the documentary, it's on the NBC Sports Channel. It's outstanding. It's outstanding. All right, we'll be right back. Final segment here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget, tonight we're on live on our video cast at 7 o'clock, broadcasting locally for Los Angeles, but all over the Internet on Phil TV and HD. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. So we have our Q&A coming up in a few minutes on Phil TV in HD. We will see you guys tonight. Of those of you who are BSPs watching us on Phil TV in HD for our Los Angeles show, and of course we are national Monday through Friday. Now we were just doing the numbers there, Bud. Were you doing that?
No. But I mean, we get.
I don't think it's possible.
All right, well, what we were doing here is we were saying the Canadians took 400 cases of beer with them over to the Summit Series in 1974. And you guys don't think you can drink?
No, I mean, how many guys are on a Canadian? Was the Canadians? Did they have?
Well, it's a hockey team, man. I don't know how many, but how many guys are on a hockey team? Are there 20, 25, 30? You know? And then they brought their wives, which I ain't saying the wives drink beer, but they did. They were allowed to bring their wives, and they brought along with them, obviously, coaches. The coaches have wives, trainers. The trainers have wives. And then there's staff, which is God knows who, you know, whoever organized this thing. So I don't think 400 cases of beer over a two-week stretch is that much of a... You guys are making a big thing out of that, you know?
Are you kidding me, man? I mean, how many... Four six-packs in a case of beer?
Look, at one case of beer, you and I could drink in one night, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so that's just two guys. Now you take 400 cases of beer, split it up between, let's say, 80 people. Nah, man, I don't think that's a problem at all. Not a problem at all. But in any event, they didn't get their 400 cases of beer because the Russians stole 200 cases of it, which is like, God, you talk about. You know, in some societies, folks, I was talking to the guys about this. Pilfering is an acknowledged fact of life in some society. In our society, if you steal, you steal. It doesn't matter if it's a penny. It doesn't matter if it's 2 cents, if it's 5 cents. Wait a second, that was in my car. Wait, you know these valets? Did you ever see that thing that we were watching, Bud?
Yeah, they're sticking their hand there and taking the money.
Yeah, some of these guys that park cars for a living, they think nothing of going through your glove box, going through the center console and taking money or taking whatever they can. Now, believe it or not, in some societies that's considered an acceptable, it's called pilfering. Now, what it means is oh, well, you know, I mean, that's how people survive. If you live, if you visit Jamaica, you live in Jamaica, talk to a cop in Jamaica about some guy just took, say, oh, I don't know, a wristwatch out of your hotel room. You didn't have it in the safe, sir? No, I did not. Well, it's, you know, well, what do you mean? In Jamaica, and maybe a wristwatch is a little heavy, I don't know, pilfering is an accepted fact of life. If you see it laying there and nobody's got any dibs on it, hey, you know, I'll grab that. Thank you. It's mine. China, that's another country where pilfering's allowed, you know. Now, I don't know about Russia, and that's a hell of a lot more than pilfering.
Yeah, you're talking about pilfering, man. They take 200 cases of beer? Man, I call that out-and-out theft. That is absolute and unequivocal.
All right, take it easy. Take it easy, man.
God, man.
I'm not kidding you.
I'd have a heart attack. Yeah, they took their 400 cases. They took their 200 cases of beer. Now, the Russians, the Canadians said later, and, you know, here's the thing about the Canadian hockey team. These guys are a bunch of rural, most of these guys are rural Canadians. They are good old boys. They are conservative. They saw themselves as the, you know, the banner carriers of freedom and capitalism. They really did. And they, in other words, they looked at the Russians the way a lot of very, most Americans would at that time. So they're over there in Russia in 1973, and it was not an easy situation for them. They're living over there for 2 weeks. They're being followed by cops. They every time they turn around, they see people following them. They know their bloody rooms are being bugged and tapped and everything else. And so this is the kind of pressure they were under. And on top of everything else, now they're there in this arena playing hockey against the Russian team, and they're playing this Canadian hockey, man. They're knocking guys' teeth out with their sticks. They're sticking a skate in a guy's face. They're, you know, doing everything they can. And meanwhile, there's guys up there with the big hats from the KGB ready to torture them at the drop of a hat.
That's probably took the beer.
That's what I'm thinking. The KGB got half the beer, and the price was, we will keep you out of the gulag, huh? What do you think?
What are they, from Italy? Man, does that sound like a...
All right, anyway, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry. And don't forget to join us for our Q&A coming up next here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. That is our Q&A, question and answer. And then tonight, of course, for our local Los Angeles show. And visit us online at philhendryshow.com for our archives and, of course, our live streaming video. We'll see you guys tonight for the video cast, or if you want to hang out for our Q&A coming up next here on Phil TV and HD and the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.